This Journey to a Dream podcast is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream. I'm Beth Espy, and this is where I talk to people who quite literally have a dream, and that dream is to race on closed roads here on the Isle of Man. Now, for some people, it is quite straightforward, but for others, it is a little bit more complicated, and the racer we're going to hear from now is still some way from that dream becoming a reality.
My name's Israel Gillette from Tennessee, originally born in Tennessee. I have Romanian residency, though, and I drove here, well, and took the Channel Tunnel and then a ferry over to the Isle of Man.
And is this your first time over here?
No, I'd say it's about my seventh trip to the Isle, at least seven. 2013, I came over with my girlfriend at the time to catch the TT.
Were you into bikes already, presumably?
Yeah, anything fast. I was already doing some racing as a late teen, go-karts, and in my early 20s, I was racing bikes as well.
To what sort of success? How good were you at it?
Oh, well, go-karts I was extremely good at. Motorcycles, I just like fast things, and I wasn't really that good at it. I mean, I was in the novice groups, I was kind of, I could latch on to the end of the top 10 or something. But in those days, I wasn't all that fast.
But you kept going, though.
I kind of stopped racing a little bit. It got too expensive. I got up into Formula Fords out of karts, and man, it was just massively expensive. And I went to university and had a job and, you know, lived life, getting in trouble. Then, I had a business and things like that, and I went back to racing, and there's a little story to that. But
you going to tell us?
Well, if you want to hear it. You've seen Dan here, and for those of you listening, Dan's my border collie rescue that he's from Tennessee now. Dan came from the same animal shelter my previous best friend, Daisy, came from, and I got her when I was about 22, 23 years old, and I had her for 15 years, and she traveled all over the world with me. And I think she made it to, 47, 48 countries, four continents. And she was in good shape, but, we'd done all these different adventures together, and I'd had plans to go to Africa, ride through Africa on the motorcycle with her. And just all of a sudden, though she was in excellent condition, she was a black lab, a border collie mutt, and she just got sick and passed away. Mm. And it was kind of a crushing for me. And, I'd done all these adventures and had plans for more, and then I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And this was 2017. And I thought, going forward, what I'm going to do, I want to change my plans. And I thought, I've not been racing in a while. I want to go back racing again. And, I want to race on the Isle of Man. And within a week or two, I went on Facebook Marketplace, and I found a Suzuki SV650 in good shape, and I bought it. And that very day I was racing, and I still had a racing license, and they honored it. First day back, I was running as a novice, and I won my first race. Like that day, I was first day on the bike. Though I hadn't been racing those years, I had been riding a great deal all over the world. And, I was wondering, is it going to translate riding around on these Tenerays and Africa Twins and, whatever else I had. And, yeah, it did. I was a much better rider then than I had been when I was trying to race in my early 20s and late teens.
That's incredible. I suppose you were doing all of that stuff around the world. Presumably, were you working alongside that? How were you financing that?
Well, okay.
Nosy question, sorry.
Yeah, well, sure. It's fine. My first really big trip, not just the transcontinental, talking about trans-European bike trip, which was my first, was trans-European from the UK to Romania. My first really big one was from Tennessee to Argentina and Chile, and I did that by myself. I just saved money. At that point, I was still in finishing up university, and I took a job at the end of school, and a carpenter job that paid pretty well and saved the money. And I lived like a Cretan through the trip. And, like not really spending much money, not many hotels. Not that the hotels in South America were terribly expensive at the time. But, just did it on a dime, did it as cheaply as possible. And there were a couple of times where I had to replace a clutch on my BMW, and that's a bear of a job, it being a shaft-driven motorcycle. You know, somebody would step up and help or advance me money for a job or, you know, things just worked out. Since then, I've pre-COVID, I was importing and exporting motorcycles, and I was sending shipping container loads of bikes and back to the States. And then I had a shipping container load of bikes meant to come to Europe to sell, but that COVID kind of goofed that up. So I've been working as a carpenter again. So when I go back to Romania this time, I'll fly to the States, and I've got a carpenter job lined up. So that's kind of how I do things.
And how did you end up wanting to be in Romania, I guess? Is that another story, isn't it?
in the early 90s, and in 1990, my father went to Romania. And he kind of fell in love with the place. He had he started a foundation and bought a farm in the late 90s. And the farm's really nice. It's a medium-sized farm. And the foundation, it continues to live on. And I'll be involved one way or another. I'm not exactly sure with that, but I do like it in Romania. So I like being on the farm.
So we heard about Daisy, and you mentioned Dan, who, if we can describe, is just sitting down next to you. I can't actually
He's laying here. He's not really bothered about anything, and he's hearing us talking about him, but he doesn't care. He's just laying there.
So when did Dan come into your life?
In 2018, the folks at the animal shelter I'd gotten Daisy from, they were very familiar with Daisy's story and, all the cool places she went after being, a shelter dog. And I got a message on Facebook, on Messenger, I believe that's how it was, from the lady running the animal shelter. And she said, we have this border collie here, and he's in on a hold, but you if you want to come in and meet with him, and if you want him, he's yours. So I went to meet with him, and he was looking a little disheveled back in his little cage, and he had dingleberries hanging off his fantail, and I was like, I don't know. But I started talking to him, and he naturally knew what I was saying. He was a smart dog, but he was very, very skittish, and I was thinking, well, is this dog going to be able to ride on a motorcycle?
Because that's the first question anybody going to pick up a dog
of course,
would have.
Of course. So, I could tell he had some potential, but I had some misgivings. So I thought, well, dog, I'm going to give you a shot. So I did the paperwork and took him home. And I let him get comfortable with me for two or three days. And I had a Suzuki DR650. And I had my friend ride it out to a kind of an abandoned road on the edge of the town I'm from, Johnson City, Tennessee. And I took his car out. And then we had the panniers on the Suzuki. And I was like, all right, dog, this is not fair. But, if we're going to be a team, you have to be able to do this. And so I loaded him up on the bike and, you know, put a set of makeshift doggles I'd made out of swimming goggles.
Do you call them doggles?
Well,
that's brilliant.
That is a trademark name. So there is a company that makes doggles. But
never heard it before.
These were not doggles. They were home fashion because I didn't have a set of daisies available. They were in Romania. So, I loaded him up in the pannier, and he kind of dug it. He was all right with it. And I fired up the engine. I was kind of worried about that. And he jerked a little bit, but it idled, and he kind of settled back down. You could tell he liked his pannier. And I was like, okay, buddy, it's do or die time. Let's rock and roll. And he was a natural. I mean, he was just great at it. It was amazing. It was amazing. And, you know, that was 5.5 years ago. And there's no doubt in my mind at this point, he is the world's best, in the history of the world, the best motorcycle dog. It's not close.
Well, I've never heard of another one, really.
They're out there. They're out there. And none of them are bad. When I say he's the best, I'm not saying all dogs are the best. He's just the most skilled rider.
I suppose I have seen people maybe with them sort of almost in backpacks and just taking them for little trips. But the idea that, I mean, he has been to some places now.
Yeah, he's somewhere in between 35 and 40 countries he's been to, 4 continents. Like Daisy made it to 4. It's hard to get to the last couple. It's almost impossible to get to Australia. It's pretty, we'll just go ahead and say Australia is impossible for a dog to get to, as well as Antarctica. So he's missing South America, but there, I've got something cooking in my head to get him to South America. So this winter, well, winter in the Northern Hemisphere, we might be trying some harebrained stuff. Well, I'll keep you posted.
Is this his first time to the Isle of Man? I know you said you've been 7 or so times, but is this his first time?
Actually, yes. And he's wearing a hand-me-down patch, but Daisy did make it to the Isle of Man. But Dan, this is his, though he has been in the UK a few times, he's never been to the Isle of Man before.
Are you enjoying it, is he? Does he like it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's loving it. We do a lot of hiking and and I don't like running, but if I'm hiking somewhere beautiful, the running comes a little easier. So we've been down in the south for the races in Castletown, and so I go to Port Erin Point St. Mary, and we've been hiking along there. There's some elevation changes and really beautiful views, and there's lots of wildlife for Dan to chase. It makes him happy. And he really enjoys it, and been doing a lot of swimming and hiking and running, trying to break a sweat each day. And he likes it here.
So obviously you were over here, as you said, for the racing down south, and we know everything that has surrounded that, and it's been truly heartbreaking for everyone involved. Is that your first attempt to road race over here?
It's my first attempt to road race, period. I've done, you know, since 2017, when I got back into racing, I've done a lot. And, obtained a pro license with Moto America in the States, or AMA Pro Racing, if you like, Racing Super Sport. I've done a lot of racing, but none of it has allowed me to reach my goal, which is race on the mountain course on the Isle of Man. So they wanted road racing, and though there's none of it in the States at all, I've come over here to get that done, and it could have worked better, but there's no keeping me down. I'm gonna do whatever's required. I'll be there and I'll do it. The next step, I don't know. I'm gonna try to race Oliver's Mount next week.
But the ultimate goal is to say the mountain course. I mean, I've spoken to so many people now who just have that in their sights. And I think, as I always say, I think it's hard for anybody who's on the outside, who isn't completely obsessed by the idea of it, to understand what it is about that 37¾ miles that just make people think, I need to do it.
Well, in my case, it was, you know, I liked fast things when I was a teenager and I first saw the broadcast from the TT that made it to the U.S. shores. And, you know, I was kind of acting like a hooligan kid. I'm still a little bit of a hooligan. And, you know, that's kind of what I did, was ride around on motorcycles and drive cars way too fast in mountain roads in Northeast Tennessee. So immediately when I saw it, I was like, wow, that I can identify with that. That looks like a lot of fun.
And who were the people you were watching at that time? Do you remember the big names?
Well, of course, you know, Joey Dunlop, I remember very, very vividly the when he was on the RC51, or you guys called the SP1, Honda, coming in and beating Nick Jeffries was big at the time, and he was on the R1, and the R1 was probably a little bit faster on the top end, but that works HRC engine on the Honda was really great. So seeing Joey, I believe he won three races that week, two or three, and you know, I was like, wow, how amazing. This guy's 48 years old or whatever he was at the time, coming out on top. And, you know, now I feel really feeling it, as I'm now in my younger 40s. But, you know, I'm like, well, if he can come and do it, so can I. So that was a big thing. And, you know, I think McGinnis was on the podium then. A few different guys.
You have presumably, during the past few days while you've been here, I'm assuming you've done a lap on the open roads of the mountain course,
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I have not. However, when you intercepted me out in the parking lot, I was on my way to do one. So Dan and I are going to, with the, you know, the afternoon, we'll do at least two laps today, so...
But you've done one before.
Oh, yeah. In 2019, I was here for the newcomers training. We did a bunch.
Okay. So talk us through your journey then, and in terms of where you're up to with things so far, of being a newcomer and looking at the MGP.
Well, you know, I got to think I've got a real good chance. You know, I do have a pro license with Moto America. I did well at the Daytona 200 this year, racing on my Ducati. I have a nice machine. I would like to think that there's some demand to get a Ducati V2 on the grid at the Manx Grand Prix. My results over the past few years have been very, very good. Getting into road races as an American is very, very, very difficult. The insurance and there's a whole lot of red tape that you got to climb through. You know, me getting into the Southern was kind of an achievement for me, and one I'd really hope to build on. Now, if I can go and do Oliver's Mount next week, I don't know. Yeah, I'll go back and try to continue to do some races at Daytona this October, and maybe Barber Motorsports Park in a big event. And, you know, getting into the road races is tough. I got an approval to race at Cookstown this year, and I couldn't get the insurance I needed to do it for me. And I couldn't find anybody to even, you know, point me in the correct direction. So that's a race I would have done, but I couldn't get the stuff required to do it. So
you said you were over here in 2019 for some newcomers bits and pieces. What was that for?
Well, for the Manx Grand Prix newcomers weekend.
So you were able to do that even though you haven't officially been given a place. Is that how it works?
Exactly. You come in, I believe it's in March they have it, or they did then, and things are done a little bit differently post-COVID, I believe. But, yeah, you come in for the weekend and you meet the guys involved, from a lot of people from Manx Motorcycle Club, and they, you know, you go and do laps, and they give you little presentations about, you know, what you can expect from the race week. At that point, it was much longer than it is now, but take you through the scrutineering and this and that. And, just for one reason or another, I didn't get the start. So,
And then, as you say, COVID popped up its head, and then you have that 2-year hiatus, and with the added difficulties, as you talk about finding insurance and whatever, is that because it's just
not out there? Is it just you don't know where to look for it, or is it?
Well, now for the events here, I know where to look for it. It's extraordinarily expensive, especially as an American. I do have Romanian residency, which could allow it to be less expensive for the next event I do here. I didn't know that coming into this one. I'm talking about for the Irish road races. It's a different insurance, and I'm not sure. I can't tell you. All I know is I called every guy I race with in the United States that has done any kind of Irish road racing or raced on the Isle of Man or any kind of road racing period. And I'm like, well, we don't really know where to point you in the direction for that. So, yeah, I'll keep asking questions. So
I have no doubt we're going to see you on the start line at some point. I really don't. With Dan there as well, probably just watching from the sidelines. And in terms of friendships, we talk about this a lot when we think about the motorcycle world and the connections you make. Are there the friends that you've made along the way, or you've met at the newcomers events?
Oh, sure. And there are several guys from that newcomers weekend that, you know, I've kept up with. One in particular, though, was Michael Mace, and he and his father, Lee, are I consider them good friends, and they've taken good care of me here coming to race at the Southern. And, you know, back when I didn't get the start in 2019, I didn't want to be, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So I came back and I worked the pit stops for him for the race. And he did really well. He probably should have finished third in a newcomer race, which they still had in those days. But on the last lap, he had some engine problems, ended up finishing just off the podium in fourth. So yeah, Michael definitely is the closest person from, you know, that I've met from here. But there's several that, as I said, that I keep up with, and we see them out there in the Facebook world.
It's really important, I guess, to have those connections, because particularly in your position where you're just looking to get that step up, you know, somebody will know someone, won't they?
Yeah. Well, that helps. But just to have somebody that's done something before, you know, it kind of helped point you in the correct direction. It's invaluable. Not just them. You know, the vice chairman of the Max Motorcycle Club, Jim Hunter. He's really helping me a lot. I don't know what to say. I want to thank the guy. He's really a genuinely nice fella. And, you know, I want to make sure that those people are commended for the help they're offering. You know, they're not really getting anything out of it other than just to help me.
Do you have any social media presence where people can keep up to date with how you're doing and what you're up to?
Well, yeah, and the biggest outlet, the Moto Mutt International, and that's MOTOMUTT International, it would be the most broadly viewed. That's on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. You can always look at Israel Eugene Gillette as well, but Moto Mutt International, that's your ticket. That's where all the good stuff's at.
And as you say, fingers crossed that you're going to get some racing in next weekend. But after that, what's next for you and Dan?
Oh, well, though we've had the good fortune of being lent a Triumph Tiger to ride around on the island with, and we're getting ready to do those couple of laps around the mountain course on. And special thanks to my friend James Vickers, who he's a contractor here on the Isle, that lent me that bike. I've been getting good use out of it, and we'll be loading up in my Toyota Urban Cruiser and floating on back to England. And then it's back to Romania. It'll be maybe we'll take the southern route on the way back. And boy, I've got to fly back to the States and pay some bills. This racing stuff's expensive.
It certainly is. Israel, thank you so much for talking to us. Lovely to meet you and Dan, and we can't wait to hear about you getting on to that MGP start line.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Israel Gillette and his faithful four-legged companion, Dan, who absolutely rocks his doggles like no other dog I've ever seen. Now, unfortunately, just after we recorded that interview, Israel found out he wasn't able to race at Oliver's Mount, but he did organise a track day at Donington Park to improve his mood, and we really do hope we'll see them both back here on the island very soon. Now, if you would like to tell your story wherever you are up to with your journey, I would love to hear from you. BethSB@manxradio.com is the best contact email. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye. This Journey to a Dream podcast has been brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Visit their website, kawasaki-insurance.co.uk, to find out how you can get covered.